Always Hole into Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Jazzat Maja, Chris Fuchs, Thomas Navin, Joe McIndo, Steve Rogers, Cavante Chillis, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Casso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Braden Arnold, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Darren Kirsch, Catherine, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, and Kathleen Holland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hole into Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined once again by, from Smallville Season 11 Facebook page, Mr. Eric Cowan. What's up, Eric?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Good. So we are continuing our Season 11 coverage and our first installment of this miniseries. We talked about the first arc, the first four issues of Smallville Season 11 being Guardian, and now we're on to the next arc, the next four issues, 5 through 8 of Smallville Season 11, Detective. So, Eric is, you know, Smallville fans. We kind of always wanted to see Batman on the show, and we never got to see him for various reasons, mainly the Warner Brothers film division being very protective of the Batman character. A couple of offhand references, but other than that, there was no hint of a cape or cowl in Smallville, the series. But when it came to the comic books, we got to see Batman v Superman, didn't we?
Yes, and it was a great read.
You know, over the course of Smallville, they played with an idea of Batman. Like all the fans were like, is Adam Knight going to be Batman? You know, Ian Somerhalder's character in season three, and then obviously that did not pan out. But then, you know, when Green Arrow came on, he really became a Batman analog in a lot of ways on the show. So we kind of fulfilled that need of a dark vigilante character. Not so much dark for Green Arrow, but Green Arrow really became the Batman of Smallville. So I was very interested to see what they did with Batman when they brought him into the Smallville universe in the comic book. So what did you think of their take on the character?
I thought it was kind of unusual that Barbara Gordon is Nightwing, which maybe that happened in the comics at some point. I just was never aware of that. So I thought that was kind of an interesting take.
Yeah, actually, Barbara Gordon was not supposed to be the Nightwing in this arc. Brian Q. Miller, the author, writer, he was actually going to use Stephanie Brown, who had been a Robin at a time and was also known as Spoiler in the DC comic books. And for whatever reason, that was changed. So they changed her to Barbara Gordon. The Batman animated show, Beware the Batman, that actually had Batgirl first and Barbara Gordon first before any Robins in it. But other than that, it's odd to see a Batman with a Barbara Gordon sidekick and not one of the many Robins they could have chosen from.
Is there even a, in this universe, is there even a Dick Grayson? Is Tim around? Who knows?
So many questions.
Because for some reason, Dick Grayson apparently isn't Robin, and he's also apparently not Nightwing either.
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't bother me as much as I find it interesting, like, point of conversation. It's like, well, who else doesn't exist in this universe, right? Because it is a, you know, is an offshoot continuity, if you will. So I like how they had some fun with things. But yeah, it does raise a lot of questions about where certain characters are staples of the Batman franchise.
Well, I don't mind it being Barbara Gordon. It was just unusual to me. Could they not get Dick Grayson? Was that something that they didn't even want to try? What made them actually go for a female sidekick over a male? just to make her mix up with Lois Lane, maybe?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I'm not very sure about that. Obviously, the dynamic is different with Batman and Nightwing here, because, you know, she didn't want to go by Batgirl, right? As she says.
Yeah.
So that's funny. As they say in Batman and Robin, that's not very PC. About Batwoman or Batperson, right? So, but I know I'm not sure exactly why they chose to go that route, but and yeah, this is a unique just visual look of Batman as well. You know, they use kind of face paint on his face to better conceal his identity. What did you think about that aspect of the character?
It's probably not a bad idea. It's better than Superman's doing, that's for damn sure. Batman's extra concealed, and Superman looks exactly like Clark had looked a few months earlier.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, Batman is definitely more of a veteran on the secret identity thing here. But yeah, so I mean that's our Batman element here, and he comes to Metropolis to look for Joe Chill, and in some iterations of the Batman story, Joe Chill is the man who killed his parents. So where do you stand on that? Do you like it when it's Joe Chill, or do you like it more when it's an anonymous face in the night?
Probably Joe Chill, but I don't really mind any way that they choose to go with it, because I thought that 1989 Batman movie, they did a great job of making it the Joker. In the new movie, the Joker, they gave, I'm not going to say, but they gave a really good reason for them dying, I'll say that. When it's anonymous, the show Gotham, I'm not really sure why, but they chose to make the killer Matches Malone. I don't know that name from anywhere, but whatever. Just whatever fits the story, I'm cool with, because they've made a million stories and most of them tend to be pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. I actually do like the Batman 89 origin with the Joker, Jack Napier, because in that self-contained movie, in that story, it works, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Matches Malone, that name, actually comes from the comic books. It's one of Bruce Wayne's many secret identities when he's dressed up like as an average guy on the street. So he can infiltrate some criminal underworlds and things of that nature. So, but yeah, Smallville going with the Joe Chill route here, which, you know, had become mainstream at Batman Begins in the Nolan trilogy. So, but you know, we pick up the story really. We pick up where we left off in Guardian, where Superman has been irradiated by Lex Luthor, so he can track all his movements. He's trying to figure it out in the fortress, and Lois and him are together. And, you know, it reminded me of Superman 2 a lot, because it's this big giant bed in the Fortress of Solitude. I don't know if that makes you think of that or not. So.
It's been a while since I've seen it, so no.
Well, and, you know, I'm going to talk about the artwork here. Of course, Brian Q. Miller stays on as the writer, and there are a few artists working on this one. Chris Cross, Mark Deering, Jamal Igel. And like the first arc, I feel like the art is, you know, inconsistent, but sometimes it really does look like the characters. Like, there's a lot of Superman in here that does look like Tom Welling, I think. What about you?
I thought they actually did a pretty good job on the artwork in this one. Like one of my main just things is a lot of the cover artwork, for some reason, which is what should look more like him than anything, because you're trying to draw people in to buy it, doesn't look like him a lot. Looks like just a random Superman comic a lot of times. But yeah, the artwork in this comic was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, in issue 6, the cover of this looks just like Henry Cavill. Like, it's like they just took a picture from Man of Steel and traced it. And it's an odd choice. I mean, it's one thing to be generic Superman, but to look so much like another live-action Superman is odd to me, too. I agree.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it really does. Ridiculously square-jawed, kind of short hair. It's like, it's not even what he looks like inside the comic when you open it up.
No, not at all. And he has the cleft chin, kind of like Henry Cavill. So I got that working for him there. So I did like how Batman was like a veteran, like he'd be around for a while. I like it when Batman is the older hero and Superman's the younger one. That's usually how they choose to play things in the comic books. And I like, obviously, he had done his study. There's a lot of great continuity. As with the first arc we were talking about, there's a lot of great, deep Smallville continuity in here, such as Batman doing his research, as he does, the world's greatest detective, and identifying the red solar rays and using that as a weakness against Superman. He shoots it out of his suit. And that's something that, to my knowledge, I've never seen in another comic book. Usually he has kryptonite or something. And I think that was pretty creative to make him more human.
Never seen it. Not quite as effective as kryptonite, though, obviously. But, yeah, he definitely got some good looks in. Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, let's face it, right? If Batman and Superman were ever going to fight, right? Superman would wipe the floor with him in a fair fight. So that's what it is. It's, you know, brains versus brawn. Batman has to think of all these tricks and stuff. And it is interesting, you know, this came out in 2012. This was, you know, a few years before we saw this confrontation on the big screen, but it is it's a very classic superhero thing. Probably, you know, up until The Dark Knight Returns, Superman and Batman were always portrayed as friends and they didn't really fight. But after, you know, Frank Miller did such a touchstone in comic books, basically the Batman-Superman conflict there, that's become a real regular thing in comic books. You see it in Hush, you know, you see it in the New 52, you see it everywhere where Batman and Superman are fighting in the comic books. So how did you think this fight, their initial confrontation, held up as opposed to other ones?
It was a good fight. I like that, you know, Superman was a little bit surprised by the Red Sun rays and got the crap kicked out of him a little bit. But then when he decided to really fight back, you know, he didn't put it on him. And that's something Superman tends to do, is take it easy on people. And that's what he did. Because at the end there, he could have killed Batman pretty easily. But he chose to let him live and just stop the fight. Broke the Red Sun Ray thing, which actually came back later. I don't know if it was repaired or if it wasn't really broken. But, yeah, it was a good fight. Batman got the better of it. But, of course, at the end, Superman would have won and let him off the hook.
Yeah, no, I like how he actually, you know, gets Batman to admit what he was after, because again, deep continuity, right? Batman is trying to break Bruno Mannheim out of prison. Bruno Mannheim, being part of Inner Gang and being in the later seasons of Smallville, and he wants to break him out of prison to have information about Joe Chill, why Batman came to Metropolis, and he actually, you know, that's what kind of stops the fight really between Batman and Superman. He's like, why are you trying to break him out? And he's like, he has information about who killed my parents. So a much better way to end the conflict than their moms having the same first name, in my opinion, Eric. I don't know where you land on that for Batman versus Superman, though. So.
Well, I honestly didn't think the whole Martha scene was as comical as a lot of people did. But it was I get why people think it was. But I could see something there. You know, he's haunted and then just all of a sudden somebody uses his mom's name. So I kind of got it, but I can see why people didn't.
We have Green Arrow coming to blows with Nightwing here. And it's funny how Green Arrow has kind of become Superman's sidekick, right? I mean, that's almost, that's how they equated in this confrontation. Because, you know, you have Batman versus Superman, but then you have Nightwing, a very skilled martial artist over here. Like, well, they're going to fight Green Arrow. So they have not the Green Arrow is Superman's sidekick, but when you pit him up against Nightwing, it's like that's the logical category that he falls into, so.
Oh yeah, very, very, very much so. Like in the TV show, a lot of times he ended up being a very, very front and center superhero. In this, he feels like he's really dropped to the background. Even towards the end of it, when they make the newspaper, Batman and Superman save the day, Green Arrow's not even mentioned, even though he was a pretty major part of it.
And you know, obviously, as in all these superhero things go, they make up and then team up to solve the mysteries and whatnot. And we get to meet an old Joe Chill in prison, and then Mr. Freeze shows up as well. I did not expect to see Mr. Freeze in this comic run, did you?
No, I think they just wanted to throw in some Batman villain, and it seems like every time they do it, they throw in the Joker, so maybe they went a different method this time.
And then speaking of the Joker, we have kind of Smallville's version of the Joker, I guess. We have Toy Man make a return appearance. Now, Toy Man became a pretty prominent villain in the last, I think he had one episode each in the last three seasons of Smallville, and he kind of set up the Injustice Gang in the second to last episode, which was a hanging thread of the series, which they kind of follow up here, because we do follow up with Winslow Shot Toy Man, which, by the way, that actor who goes on to play Toy Man, he was the IT guy in Delete, so just a little deep cut returning actor there. But did you like the Toy Man on Smallville, and then did you think it was cool to bring him back here? I was kind of lukewarm on him as a character. He was fine, but I liked how they brought him back here because he was one of those kind of unresolved plot elements from the show.
I liked him on the show. I'm not saying that it's not one of those characters that couldn't have been cast to someone else. You know, there's just some that you're not going to really find anybody to do any better, and he's not necessarily one of those, but I didn't have any problem with who they chose to play him at all, and I recognize that guy from a lot of stuff. He's just a Vancouver actor who's in so much stuff. Like, I mean, Supernatural, he's in Freddy vs. Jason, he does movies, he does TV, so he was recognizable to me also.
It reminded me in some ways of Batman, Superman, Public Enemies, because we do have Superman, he gets injured with kryptonite, and Batman has to race to save him, so the tables have turned on the, you know, Batman, as initially, like, they come into conflict, but then he has to find a way to save him as well. So I feel like that was influenced by that storyline, because in Public Enemies, Superman is shot with a kryptonite bullet that Batman has to dig out of him and that kind of thing. It's a race for time to save him. So these are just all the classic beats from the Superman-Batman team-ups over the years. I feel like they hit him pretty well here, and they remixed him with a nice Smallville flavor. So
yeah, I think they did a good job. I enjoyed the read.
And, you know, speaking of it, as Batman is racing to save Superman here, the Batmobile in this, it seems very Tumblr-esque with its, like, giant wheels.
Well, it's actually a six-wheel Batmobile. Yeah, yeah. It's tankish, very tankish.
It's a black tank, right, as they say in the movie. It works. Yeah. You know, I'm all about the Tim Burton designs, to be honest. Like, that Batmobile and that Batwing have never been topped. But, you know, this coming out in 2012, simultaneous with the end of the Dark Knight trilogy. So that is the Batman on everyone's public mind. So it makes sense that would influence the designs here more than most.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, 89 Batmobile, yeah, you are absolutely right. Never been beaten. The Batwing from 1989, never been beaten. Those designs, I've actually got a collection. I went to Nashville and picked them up from this guy, and he had 22 collectible Batmobiles, and they're, I don't know what scale they are. They're much bigger than little Hot Wheel cars. And I bought all 22 of them for like $100. So I've got like a pretty decent Batmobile collection here. Like, I'm looking at them right now. But 89 has always been my favorite.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like it, and I know that they, yeah, every version wants to have its own version, like every interpretation, right? But it's like, man, like, when you get perfection like that, why not just use it? Why can't that just be the Batmobile moving forward, right? Because it's often imitated, never duplicated, as the saying goes.
Well, Batman Arkham Knight, man, I beat that whole game two different times, fully in the Michael Keaton outfit using the Michael Keaton Batmobile as soon as I could on the game. So
yes, absolutely, man. It's so cool, and that's so awesome that they know that that's such a fan favorite, such an iconic version of the character and the design. So it's so cool to play in that world with those skins, with the Batman 89 skin. So absolutely, man.
Man, I wanted those skins for all the other games, and when that finally came out, it was just like, man, I gotta have this. And it looks great too. Like, the costume, I think it's just flat out the best look. I think it's not the most functional costume. You know, Batman can't even turn his neck, has to turn his whole body. But just looks wise, I think it's the best looking costume.
Yeah, so you like 89 more than Returns as far as the costume?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, but Returns is up there. It's definitely one of the best costumes, too, because it's not really necessarily a far cry. The only difference is, if I was going to make, like, the perfect costume, just the little bat emblem from part two would have went on the suit from part one. But other than that, yes.
I like that it's unique in that movie. A lot of people don't realize that, but it has those two extra little wings on the bottom of the, you know, bat fins, or whatever you want to call them. I kind of like that. It makes it a little more unique. But I agree with you. A lot of people go to the Return suit, but to me it looks a little more robotic. You know, I like the sculpted armor of Batman 89's costume. That is my favorite. Returns is up there. And then, you know, I put the Affleck suit, the Batfleck suit up there, too, just because it's more.
Oh, yeah. The Begin suits, I didn't like that much, honestly.
No,
like the specifically the turning head, which gives it more functionality, just didn't look as good.
Mm-hmm. It's all about the bat turn, you know, where he has to turn his whole torso. So, you know, just thinking about the comic here, you know, another villain we see show up is the Prankster. Who it's like, oh, okay. Talk about a Riddler Joker ripoff. You know, it's just like they're throwing in these villains. I think, you know, Mr. Freeze has a little more weight to him because of the animated series. And, you know, of course, Batman and Robin did some bad damage to his reputation as a character. But interesting to see him show up. But the Prankster, I'm like, come on, we have enough villains going around. This guy basically in a checkered scarf. In a purple suit and like a flower, like that's all he's got going. That's his only shtick, you know. So it doesn't seem like, and maybe that's the point, but it doesn't seem like these guys are the ones to team up.
They could have literally they could have interchanged him with the Joker. I'm just throwing that out there. They could have just made him the Joker.
Well, I exactly, and I do wonder. I'm like, were there like rules about what they could or couldn't use even here? Because, you know, as we were trying to figure out, like, why do they go with Nightwing, Barbara Gordon? It's an odd combination. Because you think Batman, Superman, right? It is. It's a little obvious to team up the Joker and Lex Luthor, but that's what you do. I mean, you look at the animated series, look at the World's Finest three-parter, and that's what they did. They teamed up Lex Luthor with the Joker. So it would have been really cool to see the Joker in these comic books. Of course, we never do, but I think that would have been really cool. So,
speaking of World's Finest, I just want to throw out on World's Finest, I love Superman and Batman's first meeting. Superman tries to grab Batman by the shoulder, and Batman just judo tosses him. There's no kryptonite, no nothing. Just catches Superman completely off guard. I thought that was like a great intro.
Right, right. And even here, it's the same kind of deal where Batman leaves the tracker on Superman, you know, when he finds it. And Superman's being tracked by everybody. And he's being tracked by Lex Luthor. He's being tracked by Batman. You know, he just can't catch a break for people trying to track him and find out his identity and see what he's up to. And, you know, shifting over to Lex Luthor's plot for a bit here, of course, he's continuing to follow Superman's activity. I think it was interesting that he discovers that Superman, because obviously he's been tracking him, and he discovers that his productivity or his activity has gone up 400%. You know, since you can't be Clark Kent anymore, basically. And that makes him think like, well, I wonder what was holding you back before. So it's interesting that it's like, well, if Superman, he can't be Clark Kent, he's just going to be more active. And I think that made sense. And I liked that they had Lex realize that as well.
Yeah. So it made it very clear that he has a secret identity.
Yeah. it's like, if you had your suspicions before, clearly he has a secret identity. And, I liked Otis in this. You know, they made him a little more than, obviously he's still kind of clumsy and says silly things, but you know, as these comics go on, they do kind of flesh out Otis a little more. So they make him a little more than just comic relief, and I like that, because if he's going to stick around, like being a one-note, bumbling, idiot character would get old after a while.
I mean, you got to keep some of that dumbness to him, though. It's kind of like the Eric Matthews effect, you know? In the first season, if you ever watch Boy Meets World, the first season, he's normal, he's somewhat smart. Then when he gets stupid, it becomes a much better show. He's a much better character. You got to keep a little bit of that comic relief there.
And as you know, as far as Lex goes, we have Tess slowly taking more control, right? Or at least trying to. And Lex is subconscious, and he wakes up in his office
without him realizing.
Yeah, and that's cool because Otis is like, "Did you not make it back home last night?" He's like, "Oh no, I guess not." And she's getting more and more control, which was teased in the last. In the last comic book, where she could just like move a little bit of his body. So, and I like how they continue to draw Tess, you know, as Tess when she died, like she still has the blood stain on her clothes and stuff. So it's kind of creepy, really.
Yeah. He has no memory of killing Tess at all. Right. He just remembers like his first memory is him like waking up with her there dead. Right. Pretty much in the world, pretty much ending around him. Okay. So it makes everything a little bit more unusual because he doesn't even know what the hell she's talking about half the time, probably, which you don't, it's stuff that you're not going to see in the comic, but just if you just think about it, she can't really mention anything about their past with him knowing what the hell she's even talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And they do mention, again, talking about continuity, you know, he's talking to Bruce Wayne, because Bruce Wayne, of course, comes to town with like a business proposition for him, or at least makes that an excuse to come to Metropolis, and Lex turns him down. But he mentions, oh, with all the turmoil the company's been going through because, you know, my sister's death and the imposter of my father who ran the company into the ground. So it's interesting. They're going with that angle on the Lionel who came from a parallel universe.
Yeah. I'm curious about something. I don't remember. They were in that mirror universe. They considered it like a mirror universe, right? The one that Lionel, Ultraman and all that. They never called it like Earth 2, did they? I haven't seen it in a while.
I believe they do call it Earth 2 on one of the alternate universe episodes.
If they call it Earth 2, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if that's where that Chloe is coming from, if it was from that same world. That's
yes. So that is the same as, because in the Smallville universe, right, as far as they know, there's only one alternate universe, right? It's like the mirror universe from Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
And they do continue to, that's okay. Some of Oliver and Chloe's plot line, of course, in the background is continuing to look into the ship as well. So that's going to go be an ongoing subplot throughout the Smallville comics here.
Okay, well, you can remind me of something. That's what I was wondering. If in that mirror universe, Earth 2, I guess, did Chloe actually show up in that episode? I can't remember.
No, she didn't. And that's why it was interesting when Chloe showed up in the end of Guardian from that universe. She had brown hair. Oliver also had brown hair on Earth 2, and we saw him in season 10. So, is it blondes or brunettes over there? That's part of how that universe works, I guess. But that was some of their visual language to kind of connect those things. But no, Chloe did not show up on Earth 2, so we have no point of reference for that character.
Okay.
Again, I'd say Lois is the most from screen to page, if you will, of the Smallville characters. I think
an identical. An identical, you know, Virgin. And yeah, I agree with that. She gets quite a bit of time. And when she is, she's same old Lois.
Yeah.
Completely same old Lois. Like Clark, we don't get that because now he's trying to pretend to be Superman. So he's going to be a little bit different. But with Lois, you get the same old.
Yeah. And just her dialogue of just the way she talks, the things she says, her activities, like it's just a straight line through the end of the show to these conflicts. And even in the beginning where she refers to him as first to Clark as her forever fiance again. So I love that terminology because as we know, they're not going to get married for 6.5 more years. So I'm sure she's going to keep calling that for a good long while. And apparently that supporting background character from the Daily Planet, like Jeff, the intern, has a big crush on Lois, huh?
No, I believe that's the exact same intern from the last season of Smallville, right? The last actual season, the one where Clark starts wearing the glasses and acts like he's intimidated by little Jeff. That was Jeff, right?
Yeah, it's the same guy. Yeah.
Okay. That's also.
Yeah, that panel confused me because you're at the Daily Planet and there's like a picture of Lois and Clark on a desk and you see this narration and you're like, is this Lois talking? And then you're like, no, it's this guy talking about her. I thought it was Lois talking about Clark. So it's a funny switch.
Yeah.
But you know, did you miss not seeing the reporter Clark Kent in this arc? Because that's something I thought was really cool about Guardian was, oh good, we finally get to see reporter Clark Kent at the planet with the glasses doing his stuff. And now obviously the story has brought us to a point where he cannot be Clark Kent. So did you miss that at all? Or are you like, okay, we'll get back to it at some point. We'll just see where this story goes.
No, I didn't miss it. I mean, I understand that he can't be that because then Lex is going to wonder why the hell has he been at the Daily Planet for an hour? What's going on? And he's going to figure out he works there pretty fast.
Absolutely. You know what? I did mention Batman and Robin earlier talking about Batgirl's name and whatnot. It's interesting at the end, you know, to team up and they fight, you know, Mr. Freeze is among the villains. Batman and Superman they do change clothes. They have different costumes, so very similar. Another similarity to Batman and Robin there. What did you think of the new costumes? I mean, Batman. For me, it's like Batman usually has a costume for any situation, so that makes sense to me. But Superman's are always kind of hit and miss when he has these alternate costumes. What did you think of his costume? It was basically just like an astronaut costume with a big, you know, S on it.
Well, it didn't look good, but I mean, I think the functionality is what matters, you know. So it was functional. It kept him from, kryptonite poisoning or anything like that.
Yeah, I liked the one from Superman, the animated series.
Yeah.
I mean, it had the proper Superman S, if you will, on it. This one didn't really. It was like just literally an S. Like it was.
Bruce made it in like 15 minutes, man. Come on.
You know, that's a valid point. We don't have time. We don't have time to be on brand when time is of the essence.
Clark is like, no, man, you get my S right. Well, you know what? The city can get tortured. My S needs to be done right. That doesn't even look like hope right there.
You know what it reminds me of, though? Did you have the Batman Returns toys when you were a kid?
Yeah. Yeah.
They had so many ridiculous spinoff toys. One of them was Arctic Batman.
I had it, the white suit.
The white suit, and it had like the cold stuff, like the helmet and the stuff that you snap onto the front. And that's exactly what this kind of stuff reminded me of. And it was so funny. I had Scuba Batman and Arctic Batman, and you know, people like criticize like the Schumacher films for their merchandising. Batman Returns had all these absurd Batman toys that were not in the movie either.
I can't remember the names of them, but there was a gold suit, like a yellow suit, the normal black ones, dude, But I was like one of those marks for it, man. So I'll get my mom to buy all of them for me. So I have like all the Batman. But they kind of did it. If you paid attention, the Affleck movies, they kind of done it. Because I went and they had it. I can't remember what store I was at, but it was like $3 for some reason marked down. And I gave it to my cousin. But it was I can't remember if they called it Arctic Batman or whatever. But it's Ben Affleck's Batman and like a white Arctic suit. So I gave that to her. It was $3. So they were going the same direction, stuff that you've never even seen in the movie and making a bunch of different toys. You know, that's the reason that they didn't keep Tim Burton around is because the movies were too dark and a lot of parents didn't want their kids seeing them. So they wanted to go to like a lighter version of the movie so they could sell more toys.
It is funny. You think about, you know, 1992 and it's like Batman Returns is too dark. And then you fast forward to today and we have movies like Joker. So what things have changed, right? What a change.
But they're not marketing Joker towards children either, though, and they're not having like 1,000 toys.
They're not Happy Meals at McDonald's, things of that nature. I do understand the point of conflict there. But you know, a nice middle ground for Batman is the way to go. Much
well,
like
I'll probably raise my parents or raise my kids about like my parents did me. My mom didn't care if I watched violence. So when I was 4 years old, I watched Batman. And when I was 6 years old, 7 years old, I watched Batman Returns. And it was never an issue.
Same here, man. And we turned out just fine. We turned out just fine.
It did make me violent. So, yeah.
You know what the coolest toy, and we're going on these tangents here, but you know what the coolest toy is for Batman Returns is, which I thought at the time was the Robin toy. You know, remember the Robin? Do you have the Robin toy?
I don't remember a Robin toy from Batman Returns. They had one.
Oh man, yeah, it was cool because it was kind of based off, you know, Marlon Wayans is going to be Robin.
Yeah.
So he has darker complexion and he has kind of a flat top buzz cut haircut and he has the Tim Drake suit. And they don't tell you what Robin he is; it just says Robin. And that was like my Robin toy. Like when I played with my Batman toys when I was a kid, like that was like he looked like the animated series Robin and stuff. And that was so cool because obviously Robin wasn't in the final movie, but it was so cool to have that Tim Drake costume, which is my favorite Robin costume.
Well, I do remember having the animated series Robin, but I don't remember that that existing. Which I know the original Batman Forever was going to be Michael Keaton and Marlon Wayans as Robin, which is weird.
So speaking of sidekicks, as the kind of story goes on and reaches its conclusion, you know, Nightwing and Lois end up kind of being teammates, if you will, on their side mission. And it works out because, you know, Lois, you know, having her army training, you know, they have some back and forth about that, her being like an army brat or something, talking to Nightwing, Barbara Gordon. And so I thought that was cool to see them together, huh?
Yeah, people in the army get like 4 days of hand-to-hand combat training. So I'm not sure where in the world that this 5'7", 140-pound girl learns to beat the crap out of all kinds of, like, 6-foot-tall, 200-pound villains. But, okay. She must have been in some super advanced training.
Her dad is a general, so he perhaps put them in some special martial arts classes or things of that nature. They always use that as an excuse, and I think it's great for Lois to hold her own against, you know, villains of the week or whatever. Like, that's a great explanation for her to be able to do that, being, you know, growing up, army bases, combat, all that kind of stuff. I buy it. But then, like, up against, like, you know, hordes of supervillains, I think it's kind of a stretch. So that's
I have trouble buying Barbara Gordon doing it. At least she's got the bat suit. She's got all that kind of stuff. So I'm saying I still have trouble seeing her doing it. Lois is just hand-to-hand combat beating the crap out of men, a bunch of them.
A person. Yeah, not like you said, not a costume. You know, and speaking of the costume, I really like to – so they lean into – this Nightwing being Barbara Gordon, because the color scheme of this Nightwing is purple and gold, which is, you know, the classic Batgirl colors, you know, from like the Adam West show and the 60s comics and things like that. And they've brought that back on and off in modern comics. So I like how they changed the aesthetic, like the colors of the Nightwing costume to fit Barbara Gordon. So it wasn't just like, oh, look, here's Dick Grayson's Nightwing costume, but Barbara Gordon's in it, you know? So I like how they altered it that way. But she still has the... they're not. What are the sticks that Nightwing uses?
I know what you're talking about.
What's the terminology? Yeah, there's a word for it, and I feel silly now that I forgot. But you know, they kept the same weapon, so they didn't like completely. They melded all these identities pretty well. Like if you take all the Batman sidekicks and put them in a melting pot, right? You get this Barbara Gordon Nightwing for an alternate universe, quote unquote, like Smallville. I thought it was pretty cool. So it's cool to see them in action, and Green Arrow. You know, Green Arrow gets to use the boxing glove arrow on Mr. Freeze, huh?
You want to see him use it, but it was silly. what's it going to do? It was silly in the comics, and I get wanting to, like, in the original comics, it was silly. I get wanting to put it into the show or into the comic here, but it really was. It was kind of comic relief, but what's it going to do? Unless it's, like, unless you got a bomb, like a little mini bomb inside of the glove. Just the arrow itself would be, you know, a lot better than with a glove on it.
Yeah, I think it was funny on the actual Arrow, the TV show Arrow, they found an excuse for him to use it because he's fighting a Wildcat, and Wildcat is a boxer, so there's a boxing glove around. Yeah. So it just happens to get on an arrow, and like that was a cute, you know, nod to that.
Without being overly silly, yeah.
Yes, because practically it's like, okay, he's got a quiver full of arrows. Where does that boxing glove even fit in there? Like, is it an inflatable boxing glove? It just doesn't make any sense. So, but I appreciate them working in there. You know, it's a fun nod to the comics past. So glad we got to see that. Chloe tells Oliver she's pregnant, which was inevitable because as we saw in the Smallville series finale, they do have a son.
Little Red Arrow, yeah.
I like how they tie that in because obviously that kid is around 5 or 6, so she would have to find out she was pregnant pretty soon.
Actually, something I just had like a revelation. The last episode of Smallville, Chloe is reading a Superman comic to her son, which is the finale. But even though the inserts are the Smallville TV show, the cover looks like a generic Superman. So maybe that's what we're getting in the comic books.
That's what the inspiration they got. Yeah, that comic book is one of the most bizarre story choices in the history of writing, because it's like, so do they just take out all the proper nouns like of Clark Kent and Smallville? Because you can't do that. You can't have a comic book in the Superman universe about Clark Kent and his life in Smallville, or that kind of gives away the whole secret identity thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Bizarre.
Obviously, as all these heroes do, they have their conflict, but Superman and Bruce Wayne have a really good scene at the end, where Bruce Wayne's in Crime Alley. Actually, very much like Michael Keaton, he goes to Crime Alley, has some sunglasses on, drops off some roses, so very much like that scene in Batman 89. We have our flashbacks, little flashbacks of the Wayne murder, and Superman and Bruce Wayne have a good talk. Superman tells him, you walk the line, but you don't cross it. You know, that's why they have that respect for each other. So Batman's just not a straight-out vigilante like the Punisher or something. So they come to a good truce at the end and shake hands. And it's always good to know that, like, as fun as it is to see Batman and Superman fight, and this was an enjoyable confrontation between them here in this comic run, I think they delivered on that. And they promised us Batman versus Superman, we got it. But I think it is an overplayed trope in comics where it's like, oh, Batman and Superman are fighting! You know, like, they are superheroes, they are friends. So they have a conflict of ideology sometimes, but I think it's so easy to have them just fight.
Well, that's the whole thing about their first meeting, though. They don't have to be friends on their first meeting. And, you know, Batman is more of a skeptic about everything anyway. It's just who he is. So I think it's very believable that in almost any kind of connection, the first time he meets Superman, he might want to test himself there. Or, hell, you know how he's got contingencies on everything. He might already have that well planned out. If not even to even try to hurt him, just to see what's going on, you know? Can I take this guy?
Right. And for my criticisms of Batman v Superman, I feel like in that film, he is extremely justified to not like Superman, and I am 100% on Batman's side pretty much the whole time, up until they fight, you know? So,
well, like, just saying. I don't think he was really that justified, honestly. It's just... he basically blamed...
Well, from his perspective, you know, from his perspective, I totally get it.
Oh, I mean, I do understand that this guy can burn us all down, but he's kind of blaming him for everything that happened. Wayne Towers falling over, everybody who died. He's kind of blaming him when obviously that's actually the guy who saved you from that invasion. If Superman had never came to Earth, who would have been the one to save you from a whole mob of Superman? Who would have saved you? Because honestly, Batman wouldn't have been the one to do it. They'd have just been screwed, you know? And the invasion would have just been almost like on Smallville. You remember when they were turning the sun red? They just completely took over and started hoarding people in the cast. Can you imagine if they come down there and they didn't have Superman to go against them, how quickly they would have just completely taken over? Nobody could have done anything about it. So, I don't know. I didn't really get Batman's point, but, you know, I like Batman more than I like Superman, generally speaking. So, I was kind of on Batman's side.
There you go. Lex has a last talk with Tess at the end. They're continuing to take that plot going forward. And Lex is now, his plan is to turn it around, turn this mental connection that Tess has with him around and find out everything she knows. And so we have a very concerned look from Tess here at the end, because obviously if he finds out what she knows, he'll find out a lot about his life in the past and also, you know, the identity of Superman.
Also, he's going to lock himself to a bed and lock himself in a room from the outside every night so she can't get into his body and leak any, you know, messages to anybody. But if she can manage to take over his body while he's awake, maybe she can set up some little stuff herself. I don't know. I haven't read this in a really long time, so like I said, I don't remember a whole lot of where it's going. But I do know the next issue we're going to Impulse, the Flash.
Yes. Yeah, they're going to the Flash. And, you know, spoiler, but... if these comics truly are in continuity with Crisis on Infinite Earths, there's a reason that Kyle Gallner's Flash would not be in it. So we'll just leave it at that.
I actually do remember what you're talking about, by the way. Well, even though I don't remember it that much, I do remember why.
There yeah. You go. And speaking of reading ahead, I honestly don't remember if Batman shows up again in this comic book run. Do you?
I don't think he does, but maybe I'm wrong because, you know, it's been 10 years. Well, 7 years, 8 years, whatever, however long it's been. Too long.
Yeah, so I don't know if we're going to see Batman again in this comic run. I would like to see more of his universe. You know, maybe see a little Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne interaction. Obviously, the way this story was set up, we couldn't get that. I did like however brief it was, the Bruce Wayne Lex Luthor interaction.
Yeah.
I like that Batman can go up against Lex Luthor on that front as well, like as, you know, business guys, as rivals that way. So
I've always thought Luthor would make a great villain for Batman, and every once in a while it does happen. But they're very much opposites of each other in a lot of ways. At the end of the day, one of them is a murderous villain who uses his billions for bad. The other one goes the exact opposite way with it. But, you know, they have basically, they were given all the same things in life. And it's just where they chose to go with it.
Yeah. And then, like Batman, a lot of his best villains are dark mirrors of himself, right? Lex Luthor is an ultimate dark mirror of Bruce Wayne. So I absolutely think they're great foils. And I love in the comics where they play on that. There are storylines and moments where they kind of play up the fact that they are very, very similar people.
Going back to something we talked about at the beginning, Adam Knight, did you ever actually think he was Batman?
You know, they're like about halfway through, I thought he might be, man, because I mean, they, like, they were talking about how he knew a lot about computers,
martial arts.
He was really good at kung fu. Adam Knight, the name, you
Knight,
know, I mean, his
Dark
parents
Knight.
Died. Like this would have been at the time of his life. Bruce Wayne would have been traveling around the world, the country, whatever, learning things and going on walkabouts and accumulating knowledge, and then to return to Gotham City one day. So the timeline would have worked out, and you know, Ian Somerhalder really did have that kind of Batman vibe going for him. So I think that would have been a little early, you know, season three, and then also the tie in with Alana plot line would have been really lame, frankly. So in retrospect, I'm glad they didn't do that. But it is one of these cool things that, you know, of course, back in the day, we're always speculating about, and it's a fun thing to look back on now, I think.
Okay, I was also one of the ones who thought it was definitely a possibility. But one of the things that I was just like WTF about was, all right, Lana is mind controlled, and she tries to kill somebody or other with an axe, I think Chloe. And Adam is the one who gets in there and tries to stop her. Anyway, hand-to-hand combat, Lana kicks his butt. And then afterwards, they're going on and on about his martial arts skills. Like, you just got your ass kicked by a chick.
Well, to be fair, he was in physical therapy, okay? He had just recovered from some, you know, vague injury, allegedly. You know, apparently Lionel set all that up, as you find out. But if you want to go with the facts being as we were told at the time, all right, he was getting over a serious physical impediment. But I see what you're saying. I joke about it sometimes on the podcast, but I really, that is like one of my favorite fights in Smallville, Chloe versus Lana and Delete with the axe. It's just,
yeah,
it's just so insane and over the top. It's very entertaining. So anyway, and then, you know, last bit on Batman, then as we close out here in Smallville proper, I thought the line that Chloe tells Clark in season 10, I thought it was so lame. She was like, I've met a billionaire with wonderful toys and a wondrous woman who will throw you for a loop. And I know we're supposed to be like, oh cool, that's Batman and Wonder Woman, but to me that's just really like facepalm inducing. I did not like those lines, to be honest.
I remember the lines completely. I was even thinking about them a little bit earlier. I didn't facepalm at it or anything like that. It wasn't necessarily great writing or anything, but they just wanted to hint at what's going to come in the future. Basically, we couldn't give you this, so let's just make a hint. At least we were able to get Bart Allen out of it, because we couldn't get Wally West. We couldn't get Barry Allen. But the show hinted so much at him being Barry. You know, just everything
right.
Seemed like he was Barry. The way that he got his powers, except for the part where he says, I'm from the future, but that was like a joke, I thought.
Yeah.
But I think we pretty much find out, if I remember correct, in the next issue, he is indeed Bart Allen. He is not Barry. Oh, did you notice in this comic, Bruce talked about how fast Clark was, and he said, well, actually, I used to be a lot faster before I could fly. So he's actually somehow lost some of the speed since he started flying.
That is an interesting line. I like that, because you think about, is it faster for him to be on the ground or to be in the air? Because maybe perhaps the traction of the ground can help propel him faster than like the air, you know, aerodynamic nature of having to fly and air resistance and things like that. So maybe the cape is what slows him down.
I'm going to guess he's faster flying when he's actually doing like a to and from. But when you're in a little building trying to like run from one area to another, he's still running. He's not flying. So maybe just all the focus he's put on flying, he's lost some of the speed running.
Yeah, no, that was a good one-liner there too, and I like their interactions throughout the whole thing, talking about these things, and yeah, I mean, for Batman and Superman, a meeting in the Smallville universe, this hit all the points I wanted to see, and I think they did a really good job with it, and yeah, I mean, they're two for two as far as I'm concerned in these story arcs. What about you, Eric?
Oh, absolutely. Every once in a while, there'd be a kind of a bad episode of Smallville. I don't think any of the episodes were horrible, but it's probably just because I like the characters a lot. But they had some, you know, worser episodes, and I'm hoping we don't run into any of those. But from what I remember, I think they're all pretty damn good.
So two down, six to go, but we have two winners so far in the books. So, Eric, a lot of fun talking about these comics. It's a lot of fun to revisit these, because like you, I haven't looked at these in years, and I was curious to see how these held up, and they still do. So I'm these are delightful to find, and I'm really impressed by ultimately the, like, they really do, at least so far, the artwork, even though it's inconsistent, there is a lot of familiar looks here of the Smallville cast. So I feel like I actually am reading, in both the visuals and the writing, a true continuation of the characters that we love from the show, and not just a generic DC comic with the characters in it. So I'm impressed by that. I'm looking forward to the rest of the episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Next week, man, we get to see possibly the fate of Bart Allen.
In our next arc, we'll be back with Haunted, where the Flash returns, and we get some Flash legacy stuff, and it's a fun one. So, Eric, a lot of fun, man. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Smallville Season 11 Facebook page. I can't think. It's Smallville, or Facebook.com/Smallville11Season. Also, MMA Outsiders on Facebook. Facebook.com/MMA Outsiders.
Alrighty, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. As for the podcast, you can find us on Always Smallville on Twitter with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Along to Smallville. You can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. That's going to do it for this Superman special, but we'll be back next time talking about Episode 3 of Smallville Season 11. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.